Hey, it's Daily from the King's Cast. This particular episode is part one of our conversation last night. We went so long that we had to cut it into two parts. I'll schedule part two to be published 7 a.m. in the morning tomorrow. Enjoy, and thanks for listening. Welcome to the Sports Ethos King's Cast. It's Daily, joined by my co-pilots, Liz and Naima. What's going on?
What's up, y'all?
Hello, everybody.
So first and foremost, we called it, we talked about it the last time on this podcast. We said Mike Brown was going to get his extension. It was only a matter of time. Mike Brown signs his extension for $8.5 million, a raise from his $4 million contract, I believe, with bonuses that would take him past $10 million. This wasn't a surprise to us. Unfortunately, when the Woj bomb hit, that there was a so-called gulf between Mike Brown and the front office as far as what his salary should be. I felt like all of King's Twitter just threw fits for a day or two. What'd you guys think of that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, they had to get it done because you have a coach who came in and immediately made an impact, you know, with getting them to the playoffs for the first time in 16 years and then followed up by, you know, another winning season. Yes, it ended in disappointment with us not necessarily making the playoffs, but I think, you know, like you have to take into account there was injuries. The West got, you know, so much better this year. Everyone was getting healthy at the right time towards the end of the season while we were kind of getting hurt towards the end of the season. So you can't really like fully put that, you know, on Mike Brown. Like, yes, he's a part of that, but, you know, because you do have to make those adjustments in coaching. But, you know, if your players aren't stepping up that are needing to step up when it's the right time, you know, that falls on a lot of the players' shoulders too. So I knew they were going to get it done. It was just a matter of how they were going to structure the contract. And I think I said last, you know, week, like if they need to do like the incentive based stuff, like I think that's perfect because, you know, like he's a great coach, but again, you kind of have to prove yourself in this league. And, you know, if you want to make the type of money that some of these like higher end head coaches are making, you know, outside of anything, Monty Williams, because that's a strange situation over in Detroit. But, you know, I think you have to have, you know, at least a playoff series win under your belt to make some, you know, big bucks. So I like that they gave him a nice boost and then they're basically, you know, giving him those incentives like, hey, you know, we don't necessarily know what they are, but assuming they're playoff based to get to pass that $10 million. So absolutely the right, you know, call by the front office. And then, you know, obviously Mike Brown's happy with it or else he wouldn't have signed the extension. So glad to get that done. Glad to get that over with, you know, before the season started. You know, he's obviously was going into his final year of his contract. So it's just good to get it done. Of course, there's always going to be a little drama, you know, but yeah, they got it done and we can move past it.
But before we move on, BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Finals this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of our over 150 slots games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, the game starts here.
Yeah, I completely agree with what Liz was saying. You know, this was a very important time to like put like thing the Kings to put their foot down and go like, we're going to do the right thing. We're going to sign Mike Brown and do it quickly after these reports came out. And of course the headlines are going to be drama filled and something to like catch your eye. And I'm sure they were just working out the kinks of what the contract really wanted, what Mike Brown wanted and what they were going to negotiate and come to agreement. So I'm just glad it's done. We don't have to hear that anymore. And we have Mike Brown for the next few years. I'm just happy about that. Look, we talk about this all the time. The Kings made the playoffs finally with getting him as a head coach. You know, this past year was tough. making the play-in, but then losing ultimately in the second play-in game. So it's like, this is what you need, and you need confidence from the front office to sign a coach like Mike Brown. And he's also, from what I know, we don't know everything, but from what it seems like, all the players, if not, you know, most of them love Mike Brown as a coach, especially Malik Monk. And, you know, if we want to re-sign him, it's really important that we were to sign Mike Brown as quickly as we did once reports came out, you know. So, yeah, just happy to get it. Happy the Kings got it done.
I'm just glad that the contract was fair. I didn't want the Kings to overpay either. I don't believe, just give him whatever he wants. I felt like that's what a lot of fans were saying, just give him whatever he wants. He deserves it. He got us out of the playoff drought. It's like, no, that's kind of a poverty franchise mentality. I think we should give him what he's worth and give him the market value. Like I said in the last episode, Rick Carlisle makes $7.5 million a year. And then coaches like Coach Spo, who has always had his teams perform above and beyond, plus he's a multi-time world championship coach, he made 15 or 16 million a year. And it's like, I don't believe the Kings should have given Mike Brown, quote unquote, whatever he wants. I felt like it should have been at market value, which I think this contract is. Yes, 5 million a year would be too low. But then I also think 10 million a year just outright would be too high considering the market. So they met somewhere in the middle with 8.5 with bonuses that would take him past 10 million, which I think is fair. I think he should still earn that amount. Just because you get us to the playoffs, I just feel like that's not enough. We need to be excellent and have deep runs in the playoffs so you can earn that $10 million a year. So that's how I feel. And I'm glad they got it done. And now we could rest easy and not stress about it. That 16 years of drama really reared its ugly head on the timeline when the news broke, but it is what it is. So considering that, and considering Mike Brown's going to be the Kings head coach through the 26-27 season, what is the Kings' true window for title contention?
I would say, I mean, we're basically year two, you know, in going into year three with, you know, Mike Brown as the head coach. And then, you know, you have your core guys and, you know, Fox, Sabonis, you know, obviously they're expecting Keegan to kind of fit into that core as well. I would say you probably have a good, like, 6-year window with those guys because, I mean, we've seen some of these, like, older players, you know, not win their first championship until they're like 28 or older. So, you know, we have, I think Fox turned 26 this past season. Sabonis, I think, was 27 this past season. So those guys can continue to play at a high level like they're playing. And then obviously Keegan, yes, he's like a little bit of on the older side, you know, as like he was coming into the league as a rookie. But if he continues to get better and they continue to kind of make the right moves, you know, around the team to kind of bolster that depth, then, you know, they can for sure kind of extend, you know, that window. But I do believe it's probably like, if you look at it with these other teams that have kind of built, you know, through the draft and then made the proper trades and things like that and free agent signings, you know, they're right about that, like six-year timeline. So, yeah, I've always think it's like a good 6-year timeline.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, of course. A lot can happen in just one season. I mean, look at Dallas right now. I don't think anyone had them in the finals in the beginning of the year. I don't think so. But what I feel like what changed that was how they performed after All-Star break and after those trades that they had. It made such a difference for that team. And they just needed, you know, some better role players next to Luka and Kyrie. So it's hard to say. I hope it's within at least like 5-6 years where we make some important trades. And with making trades, we're going to definitely have to, as Kings fans, understand that our favorite players might be traded for something better that will have the team better. But ultimately, I do trust what Monty will do. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm the expert in everything. I just hope it's what's best for the team. And I do think with what Monty has done, and I know people have criticized that he didn't do anything this past, trade deadline season for the past season. So I know people expect him to do a lot this offseason. So I'm excited to see what he has in store. And I hope it makes the team better. And I hope we'll be happy with the direction of where the Kings will go.
Yeah, I'm going to say within the next four seasons. And I'm not saying, if we don't do anything significant within the next four seasons, we should blow it up. I'm not saying that. But I will say, considering Domantas Sabonis' contract ends after the 27-28 season, De'Aaron Fox's contract, he's going to be a free agent in 26-27 in 3 years. So it's like, I hope that we have significant improvement so that De'Aaron will want to stay, knowing that our core is title contention worthy. I do feel like stars will tend to want to look elsewhere if they realize their situation isn't as good as they want it to be. And then Keegan Murray, he's going to be a restricted free agent in 26 and 27 as well. So yeah, I would say we need to see some improvement in 2 years. And then the next 2 years after that is when, those are going to be crucial seasons for the Kings to know what direction they need to go. And yeah, hopefully we actually have this summer be our summer of, significant change, where we get new pieces that can take us out of the first round and beyond. So yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say four seasons is going to be our window. So another Kings rumor was that they were shopping the 13th pick, and then the good old HB and Kevin Huerter were on the trading block, which has been that way for, I feel like, the past two seasons. HB has always been mentioned in trades for the past three or four seasons. What do you make of that?
I mean, it's not news because, again, like you said, like those guys have kind of been in trade rumors. Davion Mitchell's kind of been included in that as well. But I think, as you're trying to better your franchise, basically pretty much like no one's off the table. Obviously, I think, Fox and Sabonis are safe from that. And probably Keegan, I'm assuming, too, because, he's only going to be going into year three. But outside of that, I don't think anyone's safe from being involved in a trade, being involved in getting cut from the team or, whatever they need to do to, bolster this roster. I was fine with Monty running it back this season because obviously that core of the starting five, did get this team into the playoffs, along with Mike Brunson coaching and then, other stuff as well, like the depth of the team. So I was okay with him kind of, signing HB to that deal, which was, fair compared to what other players in his position were getting. And then obviously the depth was kind of a disappointment in this team. There was obviously, some injury issues. Trey Lyles, I just don't think was himself this season, unfortunately having to start the season and training camp, starting the season injured. I think that definitely kind of hindered, him kind of from what he was the previous season. I think JaVale McGee was going to be a little more productive. And then obviously, he was kind of unplayable, towards the end of the season. So they went with Alex Lynn, which was a safe, bet to bring him back on such a cheap deal. And I think he performed great pretty much all season. And then, Davion Mitchell towards the end of the season, I thought had a really, strong finish. And then obviously we saw the emergence of Keon Ellis, just not only as a defensive player, but just what he was bringing to the offensive end as well in some stretches. So yeah, I think everyone's pretty much, on the table for, a trade if it makes this roster better, or if they think, they need to include them and maybe kind of like a swing for the fences type of move. I don't think Monty's that type of person, but he might have to be because his job is eventually, going to be in jeopardy if he doesn't get this team, further into a deep playoff run. And that's rightfully so. I mean, as much as it sucks, I think he's done a great job at his time in Sacramento. You have to, you know, obviously have results in this league. And, you know, until he does that, his job is not going to be safe.
You know, I don't know if this is a hot take, but I do want to say that I am one of the people that do believe that HB needs to be traded, or at the very least, he needs to be on the bench to start next season. I don't think we're going to be a contender or have a deep playoff run with HB in our starting lineup. I'm sorry. I've tried to watch HB for the past 2 years and everything, and he's not a bad player per se, but we just need an upgrade at that his position if we want to actually be real contenders and to go far in the playoffs. And that's honestly just my belief. Kevin Huerter, I feel like with Kevin, it's only really this, what is this, just the past, this will be the third year, right, with him. And I think Mike Brown has been pretty harsh on him. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I do think him being benched at the beginning of the season and things like that, like it was needed and everything to send a message, you know, to have the team be playing better and everything. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was included as well in trade talks. But again, his shooting, you need a shooter like that, you know, a shooter who can hit shots quickly, like who can heat up and things like that. So for that reason, I wouldn't trade him. But again, if it happens, I would not be surprised at all. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. And like Liz said, I don't think anyone is actually safe from being traded except Fox and Sabonis. So this team might be very different upcoming season and coming seasons too. I think it will be a very different team. And yeah, just very curious to see what happens this offseason. I do hope something happens.
So any thoughts on them wanting to shop the 13th pick?
Yeah, I would not. I think we should, actually. I don't think this is like the strongest draft in recent years. However, that is, don't take me too seriously with that, because I don't watch the draft like that. I know that people have, they're actually draft experts and everything. It's hard for me to like follow that because of like how many players are in the draft and how many spots and things like that. And I will please tell me if this is actually a good draft. But from what I've seen, there are a lot of talks of like so many teams trying to just trade away their picks for something because they don't see much in this draft. So,
yeah, I think, you know, anything has to be on the table when you're a general manager. Like you have to be creative. You have to, you know, think of what you can do to get this team better. And sometimes, yes, that involves trading your draft picks, you know, and obviously in this league, as we've seen some of these teams, you know, like Utah, like OKC, I mean, they've kind of like basically hoarded like first round, you know, picks for the past couple of years, but that's kind of smart of them because they're, you know, especially OKC, they got in a position where they made the second round this season. They have a boatload of young talent. And then they have all these draft picks to where they could potentially make a really, really good move to make that team like better than it was last year. And, you know, potentially get that like number two next to Shea and then move forward. So, yeah, anything I think has to be on the table when you're a basketball franchise. Because, again, like you have to make your team better. And sometimes it hits and sometimes it doesn't. But if you don't try, like you never know the results. And you can't necessarily play it fully safe in any league, because if you play it too safe, then you kind of, you know, aren't taking those risks, aren't doing those things. And Monty's kind of done that. Like he obviously took the big risk in trading away Haliburton, who, you know, we've seen the potential of him and what he can be, for a guy like Sabonis. And obviously it paid off, you know, for both teams. And that's very rare in the NBA. So you sometimes have to take risks like that. You have to get rid of, you know, fans' favorite players, and they don't want to see him go. I mean, we watched that back in the day with Jason Williams. Like, they had to trade Jason Williams away. They got Mike Bibby. That obviously paid off, and, you know, we saw what that became. So you just have to do things in this league that sometimes people may not like, but if it brings you results, then it keeps a lot of people quiet.
Well, the phrase that keeps going around is the Kings are trading the 13th pick for a win-now piece. along with HB and Kevin Huerter. And, you know, let's face it, most contenders aren't going to start a rookie and have them in the starting lineup, unless, of course, it's an extraordinary talent like Chet Holmgren, who still had a season under his belt watching from the sidelines. So, I'm totally fine with it. But, yeah, it does have to make it happen. It does have to be for a player that makes sense, that is truly going to take us over the top. And the sad thing is, when it comes to just Kings fans in general, I don't think anyone's going to be happy with whoever we get. You know, if it's just the typical names that are being thrown around out there, whether it's Kyle Kuzma and players like that, it's like everybody 9 times out of 10 wants rim protection, but then they also still want a shooter. And it's like, and no, we cannot split Naz Reid in half and clone him and have a Naz Reid of our own. It's really hard out there as far as what pieces are available to us. So we'll see. The only sad thing is that Monty, to me, is an above average drafter. He knows talent. He has the scouts, and he's been really good when it comes to getting talent in the draft. So it's a shame that we are going to trade this 13th pick, because I want to see who he would have gotten. And if there's no guarantee that they're actually going to find a trading partner and they're going to trade this 13th pick. But yeah, if it does happen, it's going to be a little disappointing just from my end, just because I do think Monty has a good eye for talent and he would probably pick somebody that could help this team. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think too, I mean, the Kyle Kuzma thing, I feel like, is always going to be tied to us, because obviously Monty was like minutes away from trading for him when he was in LA, and that deal obviously fell apart when they instead switched to getting Russell Westbrook. But so I think that name's always going to be tied to the Kings, like probably for the length of Kyle Kuzma's career, because it seems like he's kind of a Monty guy. Initially, maybe not now, maybe they've pivoted from that. But again, I just think that's always going to be a rumor that's out there. But I was listening to, I think it was like something on ESPN or something. And, you know, someone had made a really good point and basically said, like, there's so much talent in the NBA, and some of these guys are just wasting away on bad teams. And you kind of have to figure out and, you know, kind of pick those gems out of those bad teams. And like with Dallas, like, it paid off, especially with PJ Washington, who was in Charlotte, who was not a good team at all this past season. And then the Washington Wizards with Daniel Gafford. That they were not a good team at all either, and they both were extraordinary going to Dallas, and they've been a really crucial part in helping them get to the NBA Finals. Like, obviously, yes, you have Luka and Kyrie, but they just can't do it themselves. They have to have that supporting cast, and those pieces absolutely help take them over the top. So yeah, if you can find those like hidden gems on these bad teams that are just like, you know, not necessarily like the star player on those bad teams, but if you can find those role pieces on these bad teams and things like that, then you're kind of setting yourself up, you know, potentially for a really successful, you know, season in future.
And if it does happen, if it is Kyle Kuzma, I will welcome it. I have no problem with him being a Sacramento King at all. His naysayers are going to just look at his counting stats and or talk about his efficiency, but come on, we all know that players perform differently in different situations. A Kyle Kuzma under a more defined role and under the guidance of Mike Brown and Jay Triano is not going to be the inefficient Kyle Kuzma that you see on the Washington Wizards, period. I will put money on that. I will stand on that hill. And, you know, he's not necessarily bad on defense, but under Mike Brown and a focused Kyle Kuzma, I think can be a plus defender. He has the physical tools to do so. So I don't see the problem of that with that. And then not to mention, it would totally be an upgrade over Harrison Barnes. And yeah, someone will argue, oh, well, Harrison Barnes is good at getting to the line, and that's Kyle Kuzma's weakness. It's like, stop. We are not going to see Kyle Kuzma with a zero stat line in, you know, how, you know, HB haters will say, oh, well, he was only doing cardio this game. That won't be the case with Kyle Kuzma. He will definitely contribute And I think Kyle Kuzma has a second or third option behind De'Aaron Fox or Malik Monk, if Malik Monk stays, of course, in the second unit, depending on how they stagger the players. I think he's going to be great. And so I will welcome that if it happens.
Well, too, and just like on the defensive front, like you don't need every player to be like, you know, a defensive specialist. Like, as long as you can get plugged in and play like into the team defense, then that's all you need to do. Because if you have your guys, you know, we've seen De'Aaron Fox obviously take a huge leap in his defense over the past couple years under Mike Brown. Now you're seeing what Keon Ellis is doing defensively, you know, Davion Mitchell, what he can do defensively. I think Sabonis has gotten better defensively. Like, yes, obviously he's not that like rim protector that everyone wants, but we don't need him to be, because what if he provides on the offensive end, but he plays into that team defense. You see Keegan, he's obviously had his really bright moments on defense as well. So if you can get Kyle Kuzma to buy into that and just play team defense, like, we don't need him to be, you know, the showstopper or nothing like that. Like, I've seen, you know, I'll use Luka as an example. Like, Luka is not a one-on-one defender. He's not going to like lock you up and, you know, whatever, but he plays so well into that team defense that they have that he can, you know, get turnovers and things like that and create things like that just because of the supporting cast that he has around him. So it absolutely can be done. We don't need Kyle Kuzma to be our number one defender. We just need him to be able to play into that team defense. And I do think, you know, so far in his career, he really hasn't had like the tools from his coaching staff, because he's kind of been in situations where his teams haven't really been that good. And, you know, the coaching staffs also haven't been that good. So I think it absolutely plays into like the defensive schemes, who your coaches are, how they, you know, coach you and how they go about it and things like that. So I think absolutely he can, you know, be provided with the right tools to fit right in with this team defense.
Yeah, I agree. I would absolutely love Zach LaVine on this team. I hope he's able to recover properly from his injury, because I know that they basically shut him down in the second half in order for him to recover from that. So, yeah. Did I just mix up Kyle Kuzma and Zach LaVine?
Yeah, you did.
Sorry, I meant
no. But you know what? That's another rumor. So
yeah,
feel free to go off on Zach LaVine, and it's not a problem at all.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't know. My brain is kind of scattered. But Kyle, same thing. Honestly, I wouldn't mind both of them on our team now that I've mentioned them. But Kyle Kuzma, I've always wanted him. I thought he was going to sign with us this offseason. I don't know. It seemed like the rumors seemed like he was going to, but then he signed that contract extension with the Wizards. So I don't know. I feel like he would be a good fit, and we need someone like him. And like you said, Daly, he is definitely an upgrade at that position where HB plays. So I think he would fit our team pretty well.
And as far as Zach LaVine goes, I think the worry for him is just the fact that he's somewhat injury prone, and then his big contract. So I totally see the concerns there. Mm-hmm. Back to Kyle Kuzma, though. If Kyle Kuzma were to become a Sacramento King, we get Winnie Harlow, fashion goddess, on our
side. Period. On the side.
When I say that, I get blank stares. You know, if you could see like the faces of people on my timeline. Nobody seems to get that. I know you do.
I know
you. Yeah. It's like, are you kidding me? Hell yeah. So go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it'll be the best thing since we got Teyana Taylor when Iman was playing.
I will say this sometimes.
So, yeah.
This season, the fact that they were filming a film here in Sacramento, mm-hmm. We still got Teyana Taylor. And that was a pleasure to see.
Super cool.
Just super
talented. Weedy sometimes. It's nice to have like the fashion icon, the girlies on the sideline. It's always fun.
Yeah, man. I mean, we need some sort of celebrities here. Not right. that I really care about that, but I still think it's fun. Yeah. Okay, so just in case the Kings don't have a trading partner for this 13th pick, just in case we keep it, the Ringer released their latest mock draft from our good friend, you know, friend of the Sacramento Kings, Kevin O'Connor. Wink, wink. He has Dalton Connect going to the Kings at 13. I don't know if either of you are familiar with his game. I watched Purdue versus Tennessee in the Elite Eight during the NCAA tournament. Dalton Knecht actually just absolutely goes off, scores 37 points. He was literally the only person on his team that was able to do anything against Purdue. He's 6'5 with a 6'9 wingspan, which isn't necessarily great. He's an older player. He's 23 years old, but he is a good shooter, 39% from three. Motion shooter, can shoot threes off the dribble. I've heard comps like Desmond Bane, you know what I mean? However, they did also comp him to KCP, and it's like, no, unfortunately, he is usually the weakest link on defense. He has somewhat slow lateral movement, so I don't think he's going to be locking anybody up or staying in front of his man. So yeah, KCP is the wrong comp, I think, for him. He's a player that I like and respect a lot, but I don't want him for the Kings, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not really in tune with like the draft process. I'm kind of more so like, hey, whoever we get, I'll support. But the good thing about, you know, this regimen that's currently in office, he's so far, you know, all of them, they've had great, great draft years. I mean, you know, obviously the first was Tyrese Haliburton, which obviously, you know, was great for us. And then it was able to help, you know, get us Sabonis. And then, you know, you had Davion Mitchell, who, you know, I think has, you know, had at times been not as great, but he's also had really good flashes. And then last season, he had a really good stretch to finish the season. And then you have Keegan Murray, obviously, who, you know, I think is only going to get better from here. Like, I think year three, year four is going to be like some of his best years. So far, what they've done draft-wise, I'm really happy with, especially what we've watched in previous years with how they drafted. So I have faith if they keep the pick, they're going to find that right, you know, piece. And again, even, you know, some of these guys, you know, I think Colby Jones in a few years is going to potentially, you know, come into play. Maybe even Jalen Slauson, you know, we obviously saw Keon Ellis, you know, come into play this season. So I have faith that not even just in the first round, even maybe in a second round, you know, he can kind of find those hidden gems as well. You know, that could potentially become something in a few years. And that's what's so great about like the G League system, is that they can go through that, get the playing time, get the experience that they need, and potentially move over. So yeah, I'm excited regardless of what they do, because I trust what this front office does when it comes to drafting. And that's a breath of fresh air, because it hasn't been, you know, the topic in other previously front offices that we've had. So yeah, I'm comfortable with whatever they do.
Yeah, like I was mentioning earlier, Liz said, I don't know much about the draft prospects, but I did see the game you're talking about, Daly, where he just went off, particularly Dalton. So from what I've seen is he's a really good shooter, and in this league, you need to shoot. It's been an ever-changing thing where everybody basically 1 through 5 needs to shoot the ball from three. So I did like what I see from him there, but again, it's the NBA is a different game. An in-game NBA game is much different than a college one, so of course that's gonna be different. But from what I've seen, I wouldn't mind if we took a chance on him. But again, I didn't watch his game throughout his college career, so I don't know much. But if Monty was to choose him, then maybe he did see something special in him.
Right. And I'll be having 2 or 3 more episodes, draft season episodes, in the next coming weeks before the actual NBA draft. And we'll be talking all about it. So I'm excited. I have a guest tomorrow night that I'm looking forward to speaking with. And we'll definitely be talking about Dalton Knecht for sure. I know this is a Sacramento Kings podcast, but this is too good to pass up. I was looking on the timeline today. It looks like the Lakers are closing in on J.J. Redick as a head coach. And I kind of just have to laugh at that. What's your take, y'all?
Seeing that, I'm like, this can't be for real. Like, don't you have to have some type of credentials to be a coach? Like, I get he was a former player and everything, and people really praise the way he, like, sees the game and how he comments on the game and whatnot. But I'm like, really? A head coach? I feel like there's other deserving head coaches, and I'm sure most people agree with that. So, yeah, it's just shocking, honestly. But it's a Lakers, so am I really that surprised? And he just recently, he didn't retire that long ago from the NBA. It's just weird to see. Because I saw people comparing it to, like, Steve Nash, and I'm like, at least that man was, like, retired, like, 10 plus, maybe not 10 years, but something around those lines. So, I don't know. Just a strange, strange thing if it actually happens.
Yeah, I think the thing that's weird for me is, I mean, they just got over, you know, firing Darvin Ham, who didn't have any head coaching experience. He obviously was an assistant with the Bucks for a long time under Budenholzer, but, like, obviously you hired him, gave him a chance as a, you know, head coach for the first time, and that didn't pan out. So to pivot to someone that's literally had no NBA coaching experience, not even as an assistant, is a little head scratching to me. And they absolutely say, like, LeBron's not involved. And it's like, come on, like, we know LeBron's involved with this. It's like, that's not, there's no, like, way you can say that he's not. Like, he just is. Like, he's the face of your franchise. Like, he's absolutely involved. But I think to give him, you know, I think he's capable of it, because the way he breaks down the games and things like that, I think is very smart. I think he's absolutely capable of it. But to give him that big of a franchise for his first coaching experience, like, I just think for him is kind of the wrong move, and for the Lakers it's the wrong move, because if he fails, it's going to put a really, really bad taste in, I think, everyone else's mouth. And I don't know if he would, you know, be able to get, like, another head coaching experience for a while. I think it would be better to maybe start out in a different franchise. But yeah, to get a head coaching job your first time by the Los Angeles Lakers, I just think that's, like, a ton of pressure, and he's going to be under an absolute microscope with everything he does. And as he should be, they're obviously, you know, one of the biggest franchises in the NBA, big city, you know, they've won 17 championships. So it's like, yes, there is a lot of pressure there already, but yeah, I think they're kind of setting himself up for failure. And I think they're kind of going to be setting him up for failure, because if, you know, Pelinka doesn't make the right moves and things like that, like, it just, I think, is going to go really bad. And again, with them just coming off of hiring a coach who didn't have head coaching experience, that obviously didn't work out. And Darvin Ham was an exceptional assistant coach. Like, he was really, really good in his time in Milwaukee, but obviously it just didn't work out. And I think he kind of got the short end of the stick in some situations with the Lakers. And I just think sometimes with these, like, scapegoating these head coaches is just really, really insane. I just, sometimes it's, like, head scratching with the firing of these head coaches, and then, like, hiring some of these head coaches super quick. But yeah, I just think it's really, really weird. I think there's some hidden gems in the league that are, like, on benches that absolutely deserve head coaching chances. And I just think to hire someone that has literally no NBA coaching experience at all, I just think is a big, big mistake.
Well, I really wonder what the bigger reason for pressure is. Is it being a Lakers coach or being LeBron's coach? I think LeBron is a coach killer. And that's going to be fascinating. If J.J. Redick does become the Lakers head coach, what's going to happen when they hit a bad stretch and they lose four in a row? Like, what's that going to look like? What are they going to be doing to J.J. Redick in the headlines? You know how the Lakers go about discussing their problems through the media and absolutely slandering whoever they need to slander, whoever the scapegoat is, right? And
well, that, and you have to look at it, because, like, as a Kings fan, like, obviously we watch, you know, every Kings game, and we see just from our own fan base how people blame Mike Brown for a lot of things. Like, over this past season, I don't know how many times I saw fire Mike Brown, which was, like, insane to me. I'm like, that's crazy. So, like, when you have the Lakers, who obviously get a lot of primetime games, they're obviously watched globally because they're such a big brand. So you're putting a head coach in that position. And again, like you said, LeBron is kind of a coach killer. So you're like having that pressure of being LeBron's coach. You're having that pressure of being one of the biggest basketball brands in the world. So it's like, I think it's just a strange move. But again, it doesn't surprise me with the Lakers. Yeah, it's very weird that they're not doing like an extensive head coaching search like that, you know, that the Kings kind of didn't do for a while. I'm like, you know, every kind of year we were like, oh, hire this person. Oh, hire this person. There was no like extensive. And finally, like when Mike Brown got hired, they actually did that, you know, coaching search. And then they got down to the final three with Mike Brown, Mark Jackson, and Steve Clifford. And then obviously, I think they absolutely went the right direction in hiring Mike Brown. So it's like, to do your franchise a disservice of just like obvious, like just putting a guy at the forefront again with no head coaching experience and no assistant coaching experience, I just think is like a really, really weird move, especially coming off of a like a new NBA head coach, and that obviously failed. So yeah, just a weird move, but hey, whatever. If it makes the Lakers bad and we continue to beat them every single year, then I'm okay with that.
Absolutely. And shout out to the conspiracy theorists who called it from the very beginning when J.J. Redick and LeBron James started that podcast. I've heard a few people, more than a few people, saying, oh yeah, LeBron's grooming him to be his next head coach. And I was like, huh, that's an interesting take. And lo and behold, look what's happening now. So shout out to them. Also, I do want to shout out the Cleveland Cavaliers. Speaking of proper coaching searches, Liz, the Cleveland Cavaliers have asked permission to interview David Adelman of the Denver Nuggets. I think that's a fine candidate for sure. I know many Kings fans wanted him to be interviewed for the open coaching position here in Sacramento a few seasons back. So kudos to them for doing so.
Didn't they also, are they trying to interview the Minnesota coach that was acting head coach when Finch went down because of his injury?
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely a candidate for Cleveland as well. Lakers wanted to interview him as well, but you know, I don't know what happened as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, that would be a good hire too.
Exactly. Oh, he's very media friendly. He's a smooth cat as far as handling the press.
Yeah, I think he's also from Ohio, so that would be pretty cool too—a full circle moment if he did become the head coach. So yeah.
Well, my biggest question too is like, you know, like LeBron and JJ Redick have, you know, started this podcast. And from what I've heard, I haven't personally listened to it. I just don't have the time. But like, I've heard it's a really great podcast, just with the way they break things down, talk about it. Because obviously LeBron is LeBron. He's a tremendous player. He knows this stuff. So the way he talks about the game, the way he knows things, you know, is awesome. And same with JJ Redick. So it's like, okay, so if he does become the Lakers head coach, like, how do you move forward in that aspect? Like, you just don't feel like, obviously you can. And two, like, I feel like, again, they're saying like LeBron's not involved in this, but like, come on, like, we're not stupid. So it's like, with LeBron being involved, he's had his past with the head coaches and things like that, and like the players that he's wanted on this team. And then obviously it not working out well, like him and Russell Westbrook were like buddy, buddy. And then, you know, when he came to LA, it didn't work out. Like, they don't even shake hands anymore. Like, they don't even want to look each other's way. So it's like, is that just going to like blow everything up in regards to that? So sometimes I just think it's super head scratching, not only the Lakers, but like other franchises. But yeah, like Cleveland is absolutely doing, you know, I think a good job and taking their time. And yeah, David Adelman, I think, has kind of been like a name mentioned a few different times in other head coaching, you know, searches. And, you know, his dad, we obviously know very well. I think he's got to have a great mind, and he's done a great job in his time in Denver, you know, sitting behind Mike Malone. So I just think it's absolutely a smart move by Cleveland. And especially like Naima said, the coach from Minnesota, you know, the assistant coach from them, I thought he did a really good job, you know, in the playoffs. I just think Dallas was like a whole another animal. And, you know, it was just very hard for them to keep up with the Luka and Kyrie backcourt and things like that. But yeah, just interesting to see how some of these teams move when it comes to coaching searches. But yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting with, you know, how other teams, not even only the Lakers, but you know, how these other open, you know, coaching spots are going to fill up.
Right. And honestly, I feel like LeBron should just man up, so to speak, and just actually suggest the idea of being a player coach. If there's anybody that could be a player coach right now in this league, it's him. And I think that would be really interesting. I think it would be really scary for the fans, which is probably why they're not going to do it anytime soon. But I think he actually could. I think that's probably what he wants to do. But, you know, maybe this J.J. Redick hiring is merely kind of like a puppet, so to speak, where, you know, he's just a figurehead, whereas LeBron James really is the true coach. There were rumors that the Lakers just ran their own stuff and disregarded whatever Darvin Ham and his coaching staff said. And they felt like they were more successful when the players were running the show. That was the rumor. I truly believe where there's smoke, there's fire. So I don't know. I say just be a player coach, man. You know, go for it.
I think you kind of have to be in this league. And unfortunately, it's not that way. I just feel like too many players dictate how, you know, these head coaches like keep their jobs. And yes, as a head coach, you need to, you know, win games and things like that. But like some of these teams that have like won games, won playoff series, they still decide to pivot in a wrong, you know, a different direction. And it comes out that it's like, oh, they were clashing with the players and did it. And it's like, sometimes, yes, like you're going to, in everyday life, you're going to sometimes go to a job and you don't always like your boss or you don't always like who's above you or whatever. But it's like, if there's a respect there and you know what I mean? Like they're providing those results of winning basketball games and things like that, then there should be absolutely no reason, you know, why a coach should get fired from a position because you didn't get along with them. So I just think there's certain players in the league that just like want to dictate how franchises are run. And I just like, you got to go to work. You're getting paid to do a job. They're getting paid to do a job. If it provides results, then it is what it is. If you don't always like what they do or whatever, then you got to suck it up and keep your mouth shut. But yeah, some of these players, it's just ridiculous how they dictate how their head coaches are, you know, coming and going.
Well, this is another topic for another podcast, but I still want to throw in Becky Hammon sooner than later needs to be considered for an NBA head coaching job. I'm just going to leave it at that. To me, she has a resume. If somebody like J.J. Redick could be considered for a head coach, Becky Hammon should definitely be considered. But again, that could be another topic for another podcast. No, Naima, nothing?
Oh, the thing is, I have zero like trust and zero belief that the NBA will hire a woman as a head coach. I honestly, I don't see it happening. Until it happens, I just don't see it happening. Like you just said, J.J. Redick having a head coaching like opportunity, and it seems like he's actually going to get the job over Becky Hammon in any of the positions that she interviewed for, or even a Dawn Staley. It's just crazy to me because clearly these women have way more experience. They have, you know, championship pedigree, all that, but somehow, some way, they're always never chosen. And you know, maybe you have that belief, but to me, I just don't see it happening anytime soon. Honestly,
no, that's totally fair. Totally fair. Liz, no comment. Yeah or no?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough world. You know, obviously, like the NBA, you know, it's like I would hope, you know, eventually to see someone give a person like Becky Hammon a shot. Obviously, she was incredible in her time as an assistant coach with, you know, the Spurs, and then, you know, obviously sitting and learning behind one of the greatest in Greg Popovich is just tremendous, you know, to have. And then what she's done so far in the WNBA, you know, with the Aces, you know, I think, you know, maybe if she is able to get a third ring with them and, you know, go back to back to back, maybe like a smaller franchise gives a chance and takes that risk and, you know, gives her a chance. And I think that, you know, like you said, her resume already speaks for itself. And if the teams are willing to give these other people chances, then, you know, sometimes you just gotta like figure it out. And, you know, it's sucky because it's always like this, you know, it's always gender-based and man versus woman, but it's like, no, I'm sorry. If you have that experience, if you have that resume, then why the heck not, you know, get hired for the position? And that goes to any, you know, industry. So I absolutely think she should be considered more right now. Unfortunately, she's not, but I definitely think if she wins another ring with the Aces, I think there might be a team that, you know, takes that gamble and hires her as a head coach, yeah. But I think she deserves it already.
The fact that you said that if she goes back to back to back, maybe they'll consider, like, that's the craziest part, right? Because it's like the women have to, like, overachieve to this unbelievable standard in order to be even slightly considered. And I think that's just the microcosm of our society. So, yeah, it's just, I hope. Yeah, we'll see, I guess.
Because already, as a man, she would already be considered, right?
Of course!
Because times out of ten, if you're...
You'd probably be hired by an NBA organization.
If you're part of the Popovich coaching tree, that already makes you hireable. Exactly. But of course, she's a woman, you know, way to be in a three-time champion, if she does become a three-time champion, mm-hmm. going back to back to back.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll be the feather in the cap that actually pushes her through. But she's interviewed for head coaching jobs before. Yeah. I think she interviewed for Portland, I believe, and maybe somebody else.
Yeah, so she did for Portland, yeah.
We'll see, you know, but yeah, we got to move forward.
I believe Dawn Staley also interviewed for Portland, but then they chose Chauncey Billups. And I have an opinion on that, but again, it's for a podcast for another day.
Yeah, and we're not trying to go drink champs 2 hours, but yeah, let's move forward.